Let me start by thanking the organizers for bringing me here. It's wonderful to be back. So I'd like to talk about some developments that occurred in the last 1.5–2 years. This is a subset of the references. Sorry, it's so long. For me, my personal involvement in the field started after hearing Son talk about his paper, and then there is a bunch of subsequent work that happened. So why are we excited? Well, so essentially we've seen connections emerge between three seemingly unrelated problems. First of these problems is the problem of surface states of 3+1 dimensional topological insulators, and that's an area that has been very active in the past few years. What happens to topological insulator surface states in the presence of strong interactions? The other problem is the problem of U1 gauge theory in 3+1D. And third, and perhaps most surprising, is the connection to the classic problem of two-dimensional quantum Hall fluid at filling factor 1/2. And in this, today we'll mostly concentrate on the first two subjects, but I might have a little bit to say about nu equal 1/2. So my talk was titled Particle Vortex Duality of Dirac Fermions, and that's really what I want to talk about. But let me first start with an easier, well-understood case of a particle vortex duality of bosons. So bosons, 2+1 dimensions. Imagine the setup for this is that we have a transition from a superfluid to an insulator of bosons. You can imagine like an optical lattice, Hubbert model, the function of T over U. Typically, we think of such a transition as condensation of bosons. So perhaps we have bosons phi, and they condense as we go into a superfluid. And this transition, is just described by the XY model, 2+1 dimensional XY model. Phi is the XY field, the boson field. It condenses as we go. Into the superfluid. Just for future reference, I'm going to put in an external electromagnetic field just to remind myself that these bosons carry charge under some global U1 symmetry. Okay, but there is an alternative way of thinking about this transition, which is imagine start with a superfluid. It has some the order parameter has some amplitude and phase, and imagine disordering the superfluid by disordering this phase variable, and that's tantamount to proliferating vortex defects in space and time. So we can think of this transition in a dual picture as vortex proliferation. Okay, and formally, we have a vortex field V, and we have a vortex field V, and this vortex field condenses as we go into the insulator. So, notice that this vortex field V is coupled to a dynamical U1 gauge field little a. There is a field strength for that, kinetic term for that gauge field. So the reason for that is that, well, vortices really are not local objects. They have logarithmic, when static in two dimensions, they have logarithmic interactions, and we can encapsulate that by coupling them to a U1 gauge field, because a U1 gauge field, Coulomb interactions in 2D are logarithmic. So, KT. So in the superfluid phase, vortices are not condensed, they're gapped. Therefore, the photon field is in the Coulomb phase, and the photon is actually just the Goldstone mode of this superfluid. And then in the insulator, vortices have condensed, and that fixes the gauge field, so everything is good. Okay. So the phase diagram, here looks the same as it does here. Well, what is the dictionary for going between these two theories? Well, first of all, we can ask, how does the physical current of bosons look? Well, in one set of variables, it looks like this. And in the dual set of variables, it maps to the flux current of this U1 gauge field little a. That is, the physical electromagnetic charge in the dual theory is given by the flux of the gauge field little a. And the boson creation operator here is an operator that creates flux to pi of little a, so it's just an instanton of a. And finally, we already said that the dual field V has an interpretation as a flux to pi vortex. V flux to pi vortex. Okay, so that's the dictionary. One other aspect that I'd like to point out is the symmetries. So this theory has a time reversal symmetry that just maps bosons to bosons, but on the dual side, under time reversal, V goes to V dagger, which is very physical. We know that under time reversal, vortices go to anti-vortices. So this is probably well known to all of you, and I apologize if I'm boring you. So this is due to Feskin and Dasgupta, Alperin. So this is really ancient history. One thing that I'd like to point out is the status of this duality. I kind of just postulated it. So what we know is that there are strongly coupled lattice versions of these two theories where the duality is exact. What we are not What we don't have a proof of is that as weakly coupled continuum field theories, these theories are dual to each other. But we have somewhat good evidence from Monte Carlo simulations that they actually are. Okay, so that's all the review of bosons. Now let me let's see. Let me talk about fermions. Okay, so fermions. So I'd like to imagine, take a three-dimensional topological insulator. Let's look at its surface. So we have a single Dirac cone on the surface. Why? Okay, so we have just a non-interacting Dirac cone of electrons. And I denote electrons by psi e. So this is, just to be very explicit, this is a two-component object. So I claim that this single Dirac cone this surface has a dual description given by the following Lagrangian. Okay, so the dual theory again involves a single Dirac cone, but now of dual fermions, and this interact with a U1 gauge field little a, which is a dynamical U1 gauge field. So this dual theory is nothing but UVG3 with a single flavor of two-component fermions. Again, this is just a two-component object.
You have the additional term at the end.
This term?
Yeah. Yeah.
So A, this is the external electromagnetic field. I'm just putting it in to keep track of what is the physical electromagnetic current. And we will. So it's just an exact analog of what was happening here. And we will discuss this. Let's discuss the dictionary, actually, for talking about these two theories, connecting these two theories. So let me maybe go back.
Maybe you'll get to this, but here you cannot resort to the lattice version, like some exact statement in the lattice version as a way of proof.
Actually, we can. So there is a very nice paper by Moroz, Alish, and Matrunich, where they make a kind of a quasi 1D construction of coupled wires, where one can explicitly show that kind of a quasi 1D lattice version of this theory is dual, exactly dual to a quasi 1D lattice version of this QED3. And again, it's an exact duality, but it only holds kind of for strongly coupled lattice theory. That is, this E squared is basically of order of the EV cutoff. So again, it's an exact statement for a certain lattice version of QED3. We don't know whether it holds for the continuum version of QED3, where the coupling constant is much smaller than the UV cutoff. But actually, for many purposes, we don't care. This is, for many purposes, we'd like to actually use this dual theory to access strongly coupled phases of topological insulator surface we really already know everything about the free Dirac cone. It's rather the strongly coupled phases that we want to understand. And then it's not actually important what happens in deep IR of this theory, that is for omega much smaller than e squared, because we can consider this kind of as a starting point and perturb this theory to access some strongly coupled interesting phases.
So the fact that you cannot write down a lattice model of a single Dirac cone does not present any issues or difficulties?
So first of all, you can. It's that model will break time reversal symmetry. But you can fine tune exactly to the transition point between. If you wish, it's convenient to think of this as living on the topological insulated surface, but you can also think of it as some living exactly in two dimensions and being at the transition point between a nu equal zero churn band and nu equal one churn band. Well, that will break. At the transition, you still break the time reversal symmetry, but you can still trace the duality on the lattice. In a certain sense, because the description of Moros and company is a quasi 1D coupled wire description, in some sense, it's already to a certain extent in the continuum limit. So maybe these questions don't enter as dangerously as
in that
formula.
So Max, should I also interpret the top line literally, or should I worry about adding irrelevant operators?
So the top line is in a pretty good shape because it's a single free Dirac cone, and we know that interactions are irrelevant there.
Yeah, it's a question of how you apply it, right? So the top theory, for example, I could apply a small magnetic field, and I'll get highly degenerate spectrum. Is that recovered in the bottom model, or
it must be?
But that highly degenerate spectrum is very susceptible to the interactions that were irrelevant in the upper zero field theory. So
let me maybe talk about this in a second when I discuss turning on a magnetic field. It's a great question, but. Okay, one other thing I wanted to say is if you want to define this, if you want to think about this theory kind of in infinite space-time, this is a perfectly good definition. If you want to think of it on a compact space-time, you have to be a little bit more careful. There are certain kind of non-perturbative issues, and the Chong may or may not decide to discuss those on Friday, and you can read about them in this very nice paper. Kind of issues to do with single Dirac cone and things like that. Okay, good. So let me put up a dictionary to go between the free fermions and this QD3. So again, the physical electromagnetic current of electrons gets mapped to the flux of this dual gauge dynamical dual gauge field little a. The electron gets mapped to a flux for pi instanton of a, and the dual fermion has an interpretation of being a flux 4 pi vortex of electrons. So this might explain why the dual fermion has a subscript CF that stands for composite fermion. So remember, composite fermions in the standard two-dimensional quantum Hall context, they correspond to electrons bound to flux 4 pi of magnetic field. So I'm saying that these dual fermions are exactly flux 4 pi's, they're flux 4 pi vortices. So that explains the nomenclature. And we'll see a bit more of a connection in a second. Okay, and the last point I wanted to make is that the Dirac cone on the topological insulator surface, we know, is protected by time reversal symmetry. Electrons are Cramer's doublet. Doublets are time reversal. And in the dual theory, these actually maps to the particle hole symmetry of the dual fermions. So again, the dual fermion is a vortex, and the vortex goes to an anti-vortex under time reversal. So so that explains this dagger. And let me remind you that these symmetries are anti-unitary. So I goes to minus I. So we see, you know, this is in some sense a very close analog of the bosonic duality, except you just replace flux 2 pi by flux 4 pi. Okay. So let me. Any other questions on this? Okay. So let me. Let me explore kind of nearby phases of this dual theory.
When you say flux 4 pi vortex of electrons, you don't mean flux 4 pi attached to electrons. When I think of composite fermion, I think of it as, you know, flux attached to fermion.
So,
but you're using the language vortex, which sounds different.
So there are various. Okay, so these are non-local objects, so we have to be fairly precise. We have to be fairly careful, but you can think of it in the following way. So there are various ways you can think about it. One way is, you know, go into a superfluid phase of these of the electrons. So then, turns out that the superfluid phase corresponds to a certain superfluid phase of electrons corresponds to a certain insulator of these dual fermions, and in that insulator, the dual fermion is really the physical flux 4 pi vortex of the electrons. You know, once you're in a superfluid, there is not a lot of ambiguity in defining what a vortex is. It can also be, you know, very that's kind of a physical way of thinking about it. You can also be very formal, and you can say, well, let me define a vortex operator in the theory of electrons. I'm just going to define it by coupling to a U1 gauge field, which is an instanton in space-time. So U1 gauge field where flux 2 pi is being created in space-time. So that kind of, if you are in a sphere, you start with no flux through the sphere, you end up with a flux 2 pi through the sphere, so you kind of must have added a, you know, if you were in a superfluid, you would have added a vortex. And now you can ask, well, what is the dual of this operator? So this is a operator, well-defined operator in the pre-Dirac theory. It's a non-local operator because this gauge field defect. So you can ask, okay, well, what does it correspond to in this dual theory? And in this dual theory, it corresponds to this operator. You can ask, sorry. If I put in, say, an instanton at point X and an anti-instanton at point Y, what's the corresponding operator here? And turns out that the operator is this.
Maybe GA.
So here, you know, it's a, let me call it vortex of X, vortex dagger of Y. Here, the operator, the correlation function it corresponds to is exactly this. So you see, in the Lagrangian, we already have a piece which is coupling of external gauge field to the internal gauge field, like this, ADA. So now, in the presence of a monopole of capital A, this term is not gauge invariant. If I make a gauge transformation A to A plus D alpha, this term transforms non-trivially, but that transformation is cancelled exactly by the transformation of the composite fermion under the gauge. So that's a very precise correspondence, and that kind of defines what I mean by a vortex operator.
Maybe very stupid question. What do you mean by superfluid of electrons?
So imagine I drive the... Imagine maybe I add some attractive interaction here, and go to a phase where the electrons are paired, so I can...
Okay, so the phase is not of a single electron, but of two electrons.
So it's exactly, it's a vortex of the Cooper Fair field, but one with winding two, so flux, actually winding four, actually. Let me write it down.
You're saying I can either think in terms of Cooper pair and go through the bosonic duality.
No, you cannot go through the bosonic duality. At least I don't know how to go through the bosonic duality. So there is a vorticity here, n. I need to have n equal to the single vortex is a flux phi vortex. So if I have a quadruple in a paired superfluid, the single vortex is a flux pi vortex. So you would have a flux pi of this A. Would trap a flux pi of this A. So quadruple vortex would trap flux 4 pi.
And you're saying this duality holds more generally than just the free term.
So we can kind of explore the phase diagram here, and in this dual language, I can also describe various phases. And some phases are easy here and difficult here, and vice versa. So let's see how some of the phases work out. Okay, so first. There is a Bohring insulator of electrons where we had a mass term and open up a gap here. Open up a gap, so that breaks time reversal symmetry, and we know that if I'm thinking of this as living on the topological insulator surface. The resulting state will have a Hall conductance given by 1/2 sine of m. So plus 1/2 or minus 1/2, depending on the sine of m. So how to describe this in the dual theory? Well, it's very easy. We just add a mass term for the dual fermions. Again, open up a mass gap of the dual fermions. If we integrate the dual fermions out, so the dual fermions are now coupled to an internal dynamical gauge field, so we get the same I over 8 pi sine of m ADA for the internal gauge field, but there is also a mutual coupling between the external gauge field and the internal gauge field. So forgetting about the probe external gauge field for a moment, we see we have a Chern-Simons term here. So this theory is completely gapped, right? The fermions got gapped out by the mass term, and A gets gapped out because of the Chern-Simons term. So just as this was an insulator, this is an insulator, and we can calculate the whole response of this insulator by integrating little a out now, and we get exactly whole conductance plus or minus 1/2, depending on the sign of the mass. Okay, so that's easy. The trivial time reversal Broken phase works out. Now let's discuss a more interesting example, actually the one that Leon already mentioned. So let's let's apply a magnetic field to the electrons. Okay, so let me take term cross A equal to the external. Now on the electron side, I'll get Landau levels, the relativistic Landau levels, just as in graphene, say. And if I started with a chemical potential exactly at the Dirac cone, I will end up with all the negative energy Landau levels filled, and the zero energy Landau level half filled, and the positive energy Landau levels empty. Okay. So what happens on the dual side? Well, on the dual side, okay, I apply a magnetic field, so the external gauge field enters here, and that really means that this dual Dirac cone gets doped to a filling above the Dirac point. In fact, the density of this dual fermions is just set by the external gauge field. Okay, so here we have a half-filled Landau level. Here we have a Fermi surface of dual fermions coupled to a dynamical gauge field A. So this should remind you of something. This is just like the Halpin-Lyrid state of a half-filled Landau level. There is a Fermi surface of some 2HC over E vortices coupled to a dynamical gauge field A. There is one distinction, which is that this composite fermions are actually Dirac particles. So Halpin, Lee, and Reed would have a Fermi surface, kind of non-relativistic composite fermions. So there is no Berry phase around the Fermi surface. And here, instead, we have a Dirac cone of these dual fermions with a Berry phase of pi around the Fermi surface. So that Berry phase is really the distinction between the two. Why is this picture with Dirac better than the old Halpin-Lee and Reed picture? Well, because actually the particle hole symmetry of a half-filled single Landau level is manifest in this new Dirac picture due to Sohn. So remember, the time reversal and particle hole symmetries get exchanged by this duality. So what used to be the particle hole symmetry of electrons here, exchanging the filled and empty states in the zeroth Landau level, actually just maps to a time reversal symmetry of this composite fermion. So. Under the physical particle hole of electrons.
Doesn't HLR3 have a Chern-Simons
That's right. So essentially, when you go from this picture to this picture, you trade the Chern-Simons term for a periphase of pi without the Chern-Simons term. And actually, if you think about it, you know, imagine you open up, you now break the particle hole symmetry here by opening up a mass gap below the chemical potential, or below the Fermi surface. Because it's below the Fermi surface, you know, you're still in the same phase, but you've lost some of the symmetry. And now make this mass gap very large, much larger than KF. So then essentially you're back to this picture, but the filled low band gives you exactly this Chern-Simons at level 1/2. So you can kind of continuous, once you break particle hole symmetry, you can for sure continuously go between.
Is the particle hole symmetry about being at an exact half filling, or does it have to be Lewis Landau level, or does it care whether you have filled Landau level?
It doesn't care which Landau level you're in.
But it cares whether you have exactly at half.
It cares whether you're exactly at half, and it cares, so if you are in a you know, two-dimensional non-relativistic context, where you know, there is a zeroth Landau level, or maybe first, doesn't matter, and then the higher Landau levels. You know, here really you must project into the lowest Landau level in order to have an exact particle hole symmetry. There is nothing. So that's why it's very cumbersome theoretically. To work with it, you need this projection into the zeroth Landau level. So kind of the conceptual benefit of working with a topological insulator surface is that there you get actually a full particle hole symmetry of the whole spectrum. The price that you have to pay is that you have to be on the surface. Yes.
Max, so you could have taken the gauge theory and Higgs, the little a gauge fields. And then you would have gotten the top theory, the Dirac fermion.
Well, so you have to be careful what you Higgs it with, right? So there are no charge one bosons in this theory. So one way to Higgs it, actually that was going to be my next example, is with a charge two condensate, but that actually gives you a topologically ordered insulator of.
So why can't I just introduce a charge one boson into it?
There are no charge one bosons in the Hilbert space of this theory. The matter is fermionic. I mean, I guess in parton constructions we know what kind of matter we have.
Yeah.
So that's kind of part of the rules of the game that we are allowed.
In the bosonic duality, there is a sense to which you go from strong coupling of one side become weak coupling of the other, like the coupling constant inverting.
I'm not sure there is it's more like the two phases get inverted.
Right.
So here, this duality kind of you fine-tune to exactly the phase transition. But again, you know, you can perturb by a mass. Right, and then the actually positive mass on one side gets mapped to a negative mass on the other side. So even that is reminiscent of the bosonic story.
But you go from one massive theory to another massive.
Yeah, the two phases are kind of very similar. One is, you know, whole conductance 1/2, the other is whole conductance minus 1/2. Or if you
other end for the bosonic case, the two phases are kind of very different.
That's right. But this is just one set of two phases that this Dirac cone is poised between. You could imagine, you know, so there's also the superfluid phase, but that doesn't have as simple a description in the dual variable. Let me maybe get back to Leon's question, which is actually kind of a subtle question. So if you really take this duality completely seriously, right? So then on this side, this is just a free theory. So when the Landau level is half filled, there is a huge degeneracy here. So presumably there should also be a huge degeneracy here. So now we have to remember that really, if this duality holds, at best, it holds in the, well, at least, doesn't really matter whether as a duality of continuum field theories or strongly coupled field theories. Really, well, at least as a duality of continuum field theories, it really only has a chance to hold deep in the infrared when omega is much smaller than e squared, and also when all the perturbations, this is dimension, maybe we need some square would be smaller than.
But are you going to impose some condition on the upper side?
So, this theory, we kind of know what the infrared is, so let's not even worry about that.
Well, it's degenerate, so it doesn't really, in some sense, doesn't have a good energy limit.
Or... That's right. So let me come to that. So this square root b is kf. So what this infrared duality would imply is that really in the limit when kf is much smaller than e squared, that is, so kf is here. This theory is really, really strongly coupled, and it would mean that kind of asymptotically in that limit, this theory has a huge degeneracy, it looks exactly like this, but that degeneracy will be broken by irrelevant perturbations to this fixed point, just as it is broken by irrelevant four Fermi couplings here. And exactly how it's broken is actually depends strongly on exactly what the irrelevant perturbation is. We know that in a half field Landau level, we don't have to get a composite fermion liquid, we can get a charge density wave or a paired state. So that depends on the microscopic details. Kind of the leap of faith that we are making here is that for certain perturbations, for certain four Fermi interactions, one can smoothly go between this limit when Kf is much smaller than e squared to an opposite limit when kf is much larger than e squared, where these gauge fluctuations are not that violent, and kind of a nice composite fermion liquid picture emerges. But that's a leap of faith, and that's a leap of faith that will only be true for certain types of microscopic interactions. So if anything, you should think of this as a story in order to get the right answer, including the right action of symmetry, of particle hole symmetry in the composite fermion.
The right answer for one phase. Or, because when you present it as a duality, it seems to apply some very broad. I mean, it's supposed to describe all the possible phases I can get from that simple Landau level picture, which has a huge degeneracy, so. Number of possible phases.
Well, I think that all of that is actually that, assuming that this duality holds in the infrared, which is not.
Yeah, I'm asking about the assumption.
Assuming that, I don't think there is actually any contradiction there. So you know, this has some irrelevant perturbations. You know, there are lots of four Fermi couplings that you can write down here. This has irrelevant perturbations, and you can. Then you should be able to match the phase diagram. That's the statement.
Well, can I ask maybe more concrete aspect of that, which is, let's say you have a Vigna crystal at nu equals a half, which may or may I think it maybe has to break particle symmetry. I'm not sure, but how would you describe that in the?
good question. So presumably it would be some sort of a. Some sort of a
condensate.
Yeah, you would have a flux of A that kind of forms some pattern, right? Because Wigner crystal is some, the charge density is not uniform, so you'd have to have a flux of A that's somehow non-uniform.
So is it a condensate of a pair of the vortices or something? Or, I mean, in the bosonic case, the, you know, Wigner crystal, is, you can think of it as a Higgs phase for the vortices, where, you know, it's a flux lattice phase for the vortices. I mean, particle symmetry for the Dirac fermion is time reversal for the gauge field, right? For the gauge field.
Yes. Yeah. So you will have.
So if you break that in the Wigner crystal, maybe it's like having a, you know, more a flux lattice.
Yeah. I mean, I guess one thing you could just think about is, you know, you have this mass, right? So just modulate this. This mass. So really, you know, okay, I present it as a sigma xy equal plus 1/2 and sigma xy equal to minus 1/2 here. But really, actually, if you you maybe modulate the mass in some way so that the filling is exactly 1/2, but your domains of nu equal 1 and nu equal 1/2 and nu equal minus 1/2.
So I think you could have a Wigner crystal of electrons or holes, maybe? I mean, I think there may be. Maybe you have to break particle symmetry? I don't know. I'm just.
Yeah, this mass down breaks by the
flow. Well, you kind of imagine you have modulation of this mass, right?
But it's spontaneous. I mean, maybe. I mean, if you don't have the modulation, the crystal forms, you know, spontaneously breaks the symmetry. Maybe that spontaneously breaks particle symmetry.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Sorry, I just, again, even, again, simple-minded question, sorry. So, I start with the free Dirac cone, I put a small magnetic field on. So we know that the ground state is very degenerate, but we also know we have this lambda level spectrum, so there are kind of, which are also degenerate, but still there's some certain very sharply defined excitations at multiples of the at the Dirac lambda level spectrum. So that's kind of high energy compared to the scale of one lambda level, but still small when B is small. So this theory is going to reproduce that.
Yeah. It must.
It does, or it must?
It must.
How do you know? Is it a fake?
Well, first of all, there is an exact duality here, right? So, in this paper. So you can just rewrite one as the other. There is an exact duality. It's just not very, because this theory is so strongly coupled.
Right? No fair appealing to somebody else.
So, well, you can have.
Monopole operators, right? It has this finite density of fermions, and they form lambda levels. Monopole operators on F theory. They're moving in the background of a finite density of composite fermions. That would imply lambda levels to that. Just going back to the original theory.
I think, and you can ask all the same questions in the bosonic case, right? So, to a certain extent.
Well, in the bosonic case, neither theory is free, so it doesn't trouble me as much.
It's just because you don't know the answer on either side.
It's sufficiently non-trivial. You know, it's hard to have a lot of structure of excited states, etc. Right? Whereas this is. Because the one side is free fermion theory, it has a lot of very special structure. It's weird to have a fully non-interacting theory dual to extremely interacting theory.
Yeah, that's weird. But they're actually supersymmetric examples where a free theory is dual to some QED.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know if that makes you.
It doesn't help me.
But,
okay. Yeah, so for nu equals 1 bosons, there's probably a dual QED3 theory as well. What's different here in that case?
Maybe Chong wants to answer, but basically the berry phase is 2 pi around the Fermi surface there, which is may or may not be the same as zero. I think it's maybe, it depends on some details, but basically zero.
I guess back to the questions here. I guess for the Dirac fermions, you're not writing down psi to a fourth term because that's irrelevant.
I'm writing down.
You're not writing down psi bar psi square because that's irrelevant for Dirac fermions.
Yes.
But phi to the fourth is relevant for bosons, right? So in the bosonic theory, when you do this duality, you had no way of dropping that term. That's why that was an interacting theory. Here, for the Dirac fermions, you are not writing down psi by psi to the square because that's irrelevant, not because that's not allowed. So without magnetic field, I think it's before you put in the magnetic field, you're still, it's not really free theory, but in only keeping the relevant terms or dropping the irrelevant terms. But once you introduce the magnetic field and start talking about the degenerate spectrum, then that counting is no longer. You cannot say that I can drop psi bar psi squared because irrelevant anymore.
Well, so psi bar psi squared, if you wish, once you go to the phase with the magnetic field, is a dangerously irrelevant perturbation. So at the very low energy scales, it determines the fate of the theory, but those energy scales will be suppressed by higher, by higher powers of square root B.
So Max, I think this Leon's question is to some extent independent of this particular duality, right? We know that the free Dirac fermion has some dual description in terms of composite fermions, which is strongly interacting. But that strongly interacting theory is secretly a free theory.
Yes.
That has to be true. Maybe it may sound shocking that there has to be such a description. And here the point, the content of this conjecture is that strongly interacting theory is actually QED3 defined with a decoupling, like in a continuum theory. But that's where the input comes in for the conjecture. But just to say there's a very strongly interacting theory that can be written in terms of these composite fermions being secretly a free theory that is not dependent on that conjecture.
Is that
you mean that there is a strongly coupled version of this, which is exactly
which is
the same.
Definitely dual to the free Dirac one.
Yeah.
And the paradox is as, if you want to think of it as a paradox, it's as apparent there.
There's evidence here.
Why must that be the case?
So this is just a different set of variables to describe the same physics. But you can choose which variables you want.
Okay.
And you can choose to describe in terms of electrons or in terms of vortices, essentially. And of course, what form that theory takes, we know it's going to be some theory.
Yeah.
Now, whether you can determine the exact form of that theory is, the bosons actually count. But we feel we know where we can start the theory and to run off and infer it to this fixed point. And here the belief, or at least the conjecture, is this very specific form that will end up at the right fixed point.
So is the belief statement that any A strongly interacting fermionic theory should have a free fermion description?
No.
Well,
only if it is composite fermion?
At some fixed point. There's a fixed point with composite fermions, but it has a free fermion description.
If you wish, this plus dot 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 must be the same as this for some value of dot dot dot. But
if you use infinite freedom,
but that hit statement has content. I mean, that's the statement with more content, I think, than the other statements about the IR. I think that's the more important statement with the dot dot dot. How much does erasing the dot 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 matter for anything that you want to say.
Doesn't actually. That's why I said that it's actually not
right.
very important
right.
whether it's plus dot 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 or not, because really all we care is that this captures the symmetries of the topological insulator surface, or if you wish, Hopfield Landau level correctly. It's really, we don't really care that much about the deep infrared of this theory, because to do anything interesting, we are going to perturb it somewhere kind of in mid-UV.
But one might care about the ultraviolet. And it seems like with the bosons, one could do the lattice duality with a well-regularized theory on either side with a, operator change of variables. And I think, maybe Jason and co. tried to do that with these one-dimensional.
Yeah.
But those theories are not regularized either, really, because, the chiral fermions go infinitely deep. And so it seems like...
Yeah, but you're capturing the you have to be maybe a little bit careful if you want to put it on a compact manifold, to make sure that everything...
It'd be nice to actually have three fermions on a lattice where, tuning the other Dirac mass very large and actually be able to make an operator change of variables and get the low energy theory down below as an operator change of variables on a lattice.
Yeah, so I don't know if Chung is going to discuss this in his talk, but
I don't have a lot
to say. What I want to say is there's actually a web of dualities that connect these various fermionic and bosonic theories, so you can actually get this duality from a theory connecting a Dirac on one side is a Dirac cone. Other side is a bosons with Chern-Simons term at level 1. So by applying that duality basically twice, you can get this one. Okay, there I also don't know a lattice. Exact lattice.
Yeah, I know, and that was viewed as a fault in that conjecture duality.
I think this, this coupled wire more or less convinces me.
It's a little
halfway there. Halfway there. Snare an X, but not one.
You could presumably take a 3D lattice model if you wanted to not fine tune anything better.
Yeah.
Take a 3D lattice model of electrons and do the duality.
On the surface.
Yeah.
We don't really know. At the moment, I think there is no exact mapping kind of on a lattice, on a non-quasi 1D lattice. I think that's right. Well, I was going to talk about the connection to the bulb, but I think there's probably no time for that.
I think you can
let me
keep going.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
You don't get away that easily.
Okay. What can I erase? Maybe everything.
I'm going to have to run, but it doesn't reflect any
dissent. That's like a satisfactory answer to your question. Okay, so what I want to talk about is a kind of a sketch of a derivation of this duality. So it's going to be both a kind of a derivation and also a connection to another set of topologies. So it turns out that this duality on the surface of a topological insulator is related to a duality that actually takes place in the bulk of a topological insulator, which is an electric magnetic duality of GI. So let's recall kind of the physical picture of this dual QED3. Remember, the dual fermion was a 4-pi vortex. So this is the TI. This is the Dirac cone of electrons. Basically, what we want to show is that a 4-pi vortex on the surface of a TI is a Dirac fermion. If you can show that, then we are in a pretty good shape. Let me actually argue that. Let me imagine the following thought experiment. Let me take a magnetic monopole M with flux 4 pi. So there's a magnetic field B coming out here. And let me take it in vacuum, and let me imagine dragging it through a topological insulator surface until it's fully inside. So once I drag it through the surface, I'm going to basically nucleate a vortex on a surface. So there is some connection between this bulk monopole and the surface vortex. And in fact, if I can show that the bulk monopole with flux 4 pi is a fermion, then it would mean that the surface vortex with flux 4 pi is also a fermion. And I'm going to further argue that actually one can think of these flux 4 pi bulk monopoles as forming a dual topological insulator of their own. And then you can think of the flux 4 pi vortices on the surface as the Dirac cone of that dual topological insulator of monopoles. Okay, so that's kind of the wish list. Now let me explain some of this. Let's just start with the topological insulator, and let's couple it to a U1 gauge field, A mu. So there is a topological insulator. On the surface, there is a Dirac cone of electrons. In the bulk, everything is gapped. So in the bulk, I can integrate the electrons out, and I will get a Maxwell theory. So this is gauged bulk TI. I'll get a Maxwell theory with a topological term at theta equal to pi. What is the effect of this? There's a gapless photon. Well, what is the effect of this topological term? Well, the effect is that if you take a magnetic monopole, it sucks up some fractional electric charge, which is proportional to the theta angle and the magnetic charge. This is the Witten effect. So if I stick a flux 2 pi monopole, a single monopole, into a topological insulator, it sucks up charge 1/2. But if I stick a double monopole in, it sucks up charge 1. But of course, we can always neutralize this charge 1 just by removing an electron from the monopole, adding a hole to the monopole. So act with psi. And you know, this removing of an electron is exactly what turns the double monopole from a boson to a fermion. So at theta equal to zero, all monopoles are bosons. All neutral monopoles, at least, are bosons. Then at tune theta, the monopole, the double monopole, starts sucking up some electric charge, but it doesn't change the statistics, because statistics is either bosonic or fermionic, so it cannot change suddenly. At theta equal to pi, so double monopole started as boson at theta equal to 0, so q equals 0, m equal to 2. At theta equal to pi, it has charge 1, flux 2, and it's still a boson. Now I neutralize it by adding a hole that turns it into a fermion. So that that establishes that the double monopole, neutral double monopole in the bulk of a TI is a fermion, so this flux for pi vortex is also a fermion on the surface. Okay, more than that, let's look at all the possible monopoles inside a TI. So they suck up some electric charge, and the fractional part is given by this, but of course I can always add electrons on top, so I get some lattice of charges and fluxes given here, some kind of slanted lattice. And if you look at this lattice, it has a symmetry. Like this. So this is just some rotation of this lattice. And in fact, if you look at this rotation, what it does is it maps the single charge to the double monopole. And it turns out that this is not just a symmetry of this lattice, but it's actually a symmetry of that Maxwell theory. As long as you, at the same time, map E to 4 pi over E. So this is kind of an electric magnetic duality of Maxwell theory at theta equal to pi. It's very similar to more familiar electric magnetic duality that one has at theta equal to 0 for a theory of bosons. Now there, the lattice of electric magnetic charges is just a square lattice, and you can interchange electric and magnetic charges, as long as you also invert the coupling constant, that's a symmetry. Well, here the mapping is a bit kind of slanted. The lattice is slanted, so the mapping is kind of slanted. But so here you interchange single charge with a double monopole. Okay, but so if the single charge forms a topological insulator, then the double monopole that it's mapped to under this duality must also form a topological insulator. It's actually a topological insulator protected not by time reversal, but by particle hole symmetry. So if you think about how the symmetries act on this lattice, you know, the time reversal maps q to q m to minus m, and the particle hole acts oppositely. Now we are interchanging q and m in this duality, so you map time reversal symmetry to particle hole symmetry. So the monopoles, the double monopoles, can be thought of as forming a topological insulator protected by particle hole symmetry. So actually, there is such a topological insulator. It's known as the chiral TI. It's this class A3, just compared to the usual class A2 for the TI. Okay, so this basically proves my point. Double monopoles form a dual topological insulator, so the double vortices on the surface of the TI can be thought of as the Dirac of that dual topological insulator of monopoles. This is maybe a little bit vague, but one can actually give a much more concrete picture with sort of by kind of combining this U1 gauge theory in two different ways. I guess I better stop here. Thank you.
Questions? Well, how do you do it? You have to confine the U1 gauge there in different ways, and you just
close. Yeah, yeah. So. So we, in some sense, we have two descriptions of the same physics. We have these two U1 gauge theories, if you wish, and the charge in one is dual to the double monopole in the other. And then under time reversal, you know, for one, psi goes to psi, and for the other, psi goes to psi diagram. If you wish, you can put some tildes here. So now, so now imagine. Put the surface back in. So here for this U1 gauge theory, you have a Dirac cone on the surface with a, which is coupled to a bulk photon. And here you also have a Dirac cone on the surface coupled to a bulk photon. So now you want to get rid of the gauge field. Well, the easiest thing to do is, so this, you should think of these fermions as kind of partons, if you're spinons. It's like a U1 spin liquid. Now confine the U1 spin liquid. So here you can do it in the following way. You can imagine taking this spinon and hybridize and taking the bound state with an electron and condensing. That's kind of like a Kondo effect. So the spinon then just becomes the same as the electron, and the gauge field is Higgsed out. So this really just becomes a TI with a Dirac cone of electrons on its surface.
With no gauge field.
With no gauge field, because the gauge field is Higgsed everywhere by the condensate. But here, on the dual side, you know, we take this. What does the spin-on correspond to? It corresponds to a double monopole. So here you're taking a bound state of a double monopole and an electron. Remember, the double monopole is a fermion, the electron is a fermion, so this is a boson, so you can condense that. So now instead of having a Higgs, you have a confinement. So the gauge field in the bulk is confined. And you can convince yourself that actually this condensate confines all the electric charges in the bulk as well. You could have thought that maybe the single monopoles survive, but the single monopoles are charged, so they're gone as well. But on the surface, as you know very well, the gauge field, when you confine the bulk, this surface gauge field doesn't have to confine. So then you're left with a surface Dirac cone coupled to a 2+1 dimensional gauge field. And then you can convince yourself that the flux of this 2+1 dimensional gauge field is nothing but the electric charge, the physical electromagnetic charge.
So it's the Higgsing and the confining to the two things you don't either side to either eliminate the gauge field entirely or leave it on the surface.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to write a lattice version of this 3D lattice version with this duality exhibited on the surface, it's kind of like you need a lattice model of this confinement. You just want to be able to capture the confinement of the bulk. At least that would be one approach to.
Yeah, you would have, so there are several things that would be required. So you would, before you even try to confine the two sides, you, well, okay, so you can ask actually, is is, so we know that in the bulk, there is this self-duality of the gauge theory, kind of in the infinite bulk. Then you'd have to ask, with these boundary conditions, where you use the same boundary conditions on the condition on the two sides, you know, just a Dirac cone, whether they're still dual to each other. That's actually not obvious. And then, if you knew that, then you'd be in a pretty good shape. Even at, you know, so even at a field theory level, actually, there is already an issue here. Then you want to do it on the lattices, maybe even more tricky. Yes?
Question. So you mentioned early on the servers, to describe the servers of the TI, is a Newtonian interaction, and the many models describe that problem, right? So in this dual language, is that possible you can calculate some quantities, say physical correlations or whatever, that cannot be calculated in the original theory?
I think this...
I answer this more for the understanding, right? Beyond which you can use that as a way to calculate some quantity that otherwise cannot be calculated.
From a microscopic model.
You have some field theory to describe the surface with interaction, right?
Yes.
That's more like my interaction. You know, you can do the perturbation to the original theory. Right? So the Dirac theory was helping us.
So you want to tune it to some transition and maybe describe the transition. Maybe the transition would be easier in the dual language. So for this very particular duality, I don't know kind of a concrete way of kind of making the field theory calculations easier on the dual side. First of all, you can't start describing, at least you have a field theory for describing certain transitions. For instance, there is a surface phase which is topologically ordered, which is a gap topological insulator, and we don't know how even to write a field theory for that transition without invoking this duality. In this duality, it becomes a very, very simple, in the dual variables, it becomes a very simple Higgs type transition. So being able to write a field theory is already something, even though you cannot maybe rigorously calculate in that theory. Also, there are various generalizations of this duality, say to two flavors of fermions, and in that case, there are various expansions that actually Čenke has proposed, where it's kind of like a some analog of 1 over n expansion or a perturbative expansion that might work.
Can you step back and explain what problems is this going to solve?
So it has already, I think, solved one problem, which is providing a manifestly particle hole symmetric description of a half field Landau level, and there are already at least numerical tests that show that, you know, the solution is correct, that indeed there is a, you know, periphase of phi around the composite fermion Fermi surface, and that particle hole acts on the composite fermions as a kind of Cramer's time reversal. So there are already numerical tests of that using the MRG in this theory.
But that composite fermion, there are composite fermion description. Did not use this Fermi duality that you're talking about.
It did. Or at least that's the one way to
justify.
That's one way to, okay, you know.
Not just writing down.
So historically, what happened? Son postulated that description.
Just wrote it down.
Yes, and this is kind of a way to derive it or understand it. It's up to you.
Yes. So Son did it in the field directly. Mm-hmm. But there's a more general framework, which is these two Dirac theories are equivalent. Mm-hmm. And one of the perturbations is to put on a field, and then you get this as a consequence. You can also choose not to put on a field. Mm-hmm. And for example, the topological order and the surface of the topological insulator is related to that description.
So that's the other problem that this theory has solved the topological order on the surface of a TI. So there was already, before a candidate, topological order, so-called TFAFN. And there were even some exactly solvable models of that TFAFN topological order. But there was no kind of a microscopic, well, not microscopic. There was no
field theory.
No field theory.
No argument.
And it wasn't really clear, actually, it wasn't clear how to go from the Dirac cone to that TFAFN. So now,
in fact, there were like two versions of the TFAFN and we went down and we weren't clear. We knew one of them was the topological instator. The other one referred to the topological instator by some bosonic topological phase. You could show that the difference between the two was just a bosonic topological phase. But we didn't know which of these two actually corresponded to the topological instator. A very kind of subtle distinction. And I kind of thought I would never know the answer in my lifetime. This was doing it, and Max is another paper, I guess you must have referenced. We need to do a little more work to actually establish that. In fact, the one that looks simpler, TFAFN plus, is indeed connected in sort of a topological state. So maybe it's like a Z2 technicality, but it was, at least at that time, it was very frustrating that it couldn't connect up.
Again, the other one is the surface of something more complicated. I mean, that's bosons in a topological phase as well.
That's a topological state, yeah.
Okay.
Can you maybe comment a bit more on like breaking particle Hold symmetry by adding a chemical potential, like how stable?
Adding a chemical potential.
Yeah, like in the, you drew this Van Gaal for the free fermions. You have this Van Gaal spectrum. You're exactly half filling. Now you got a chemical potential, like a small like perturbation to that.
So you want to maybe not be exactly at half filling, but some other filling.
Yeah. That's a magnetic field.
That's a magnetic field on the dual.
So how far you can push the chemical potential? Like what's the limit? Right. At some point I would get like Van Gaal levels in the
initially you start getting this Jain sequence, right? Near 1/2 you start getting integer quantum Hall effect of the composite fermion, so there is this Jain sequence. And that's kind of reproduced. These Dirac fermions reproduce the Jain sequence correctly, and all the kind of counting of states on the sphere, all of that works out very nicely. I think you are asking about, like, can you see the other Landau levels? Strictly speaking, if you were able, as we were discussing before, if you are able to do the calculation with E squared much larger than KF, you would see the Landau levels, actually degenerate Landau levels. But since we don't actually know how to do the calculation in this regime, it's rather in the opposite regime that we maybe can say something, and in the opposite regime that there is this nice composite fermion liquid and the nearby Jain sequence. But in the opposite regime, there is of course no way to access the other Landau levels.
I just had a question about the comment you made over there where you're doing this sort of Kondo Higgsing. You do this thing where you do a confinement in this case, right? So that presumably doesn't leave a surface 2D gauge field, right, in that problem? The only thing is external in that case?
The Higgsing does not, but the confinement does.
Is there an easy way to understand that statement? I mean, it's not obvious to me that in one case, morally it looks like you just condensed a particle in each case, and in one case, you don't have a surface electromagnetism. The other case, you have a 2+1 D surface electromagnetism. Is there a simple explanation for that?
Well, so what would confinement correspond to in this case? So to confine the surface gauge field, we kind of need instantons, right?
Okay.
And instantons correspond to processes where a double monopole or some monopole tunnels across. But actually, you find that those processes don't conserve physical electric charge, so they're actually not even allowed.
So it's important that this is M squared here, not M.
It is important that this. There are two things. There is this binding.
Binding, yeah, that's also important.
Well, so it's Chern Simons on the surface, I guess.
The mutual Chern Simons on the surface comes from this binding of the double monopole. Yeah.
heard in response to Michael's question, what's this good for? So, you know, at the neighborhood of half in the Highlander levels, there's an incompressible state, which is usually believed to be either Moody Trafian or the particle load conjugate, which is called the anti Trafian. Uh-huh. And that corresponds to superinductivity of the composite fermions. But in this Dirac description, which preserves particle load symmetry, those Trafian and anti Trafian actually spontaneously break particle load symmetry. So in this Dirac composite fermion language, they correspond to superinductivity that breaks time reversal symmetry. So you can ask, is there a superinductivity in this new Dirac theory which preserves time reversal symmetry? And it turns out it's the very natural, like Fouquet superinductor on the topological inside surface. And that actually gives you a third candidate for the incompressible state in the fermions, which is particle load symmetric. And it's this T factor in the topological order. Now, of course, numerically, that doesn't seem to be preferred. Numerically, it seems like it wants to break particle load symmetry with those particular interactions. But it could be with different interactions, different, you know, setting. It may favor that. It gives you this new candidate. And you can ask, is there any physical setting where this, yeah. And this is really a different topological order than Trafian. Trafian and anti-Trafian are the same topological order. Some integer
thermal state. But this can exist in 2D? Yes.
It can exist in 2D, but not with particle load symmetry, I mean, as a local symmetry. Or if you like, not with time reversal symmetry as a local symmetry. But as a topological order, it can exist.
Okay, new with five hops could it exist.
Yeah.
It could. And so, and its edge structure is known and it's different.
Yeah, so it's very simple. The edge structure has got a neutral mode that's upstream.
That's
right. So, in fact, there's a paper by Dima Feldman saying some of the experiments on the five hop state seem consistent with such an interpretation. It's not that unique.
It's like this. So there is a neutral Majorana, and then there is a charge mode. So for a Fafian, they move in the same direction, and here they're moving in opposite direction.
But I mean, that's usually not a strict statement. There's edge reconstruction. So it's not...
So this is one of the edge phases.
Yeah, I think we're back in time for cookies.